Hey, it's Joe. Have you ever wondered how a continuous glucose monitor could help you with your athletic performance? I don't just mean from a health and longevity perspective, but I mean actually on the day of your event, you could perform better, maybe, if only you knew what your blood sugar was doing. Have you ever wondered that? Well, I sure have. And I have found a resource that I think you'll enjoy. Hunter Allen, who has been on the podcast several times, has written another book all about using CGMs to manage your blood glucose as an athlete for superior performance. It's a great talk. Hunter is not a scientist, but he's an ex-pro cyclist and a longtime coach of endurance athletes of all sorts. And he has gotten into the weeds with scientists to understand how this works and combined that information with his practical experience managing himself and his athletes to simplify this very complicated topic into usable information for us to manage our blood glucose, not just for health, but so that we can have superior performance and superior recovery using a CGM. All right, let's talk to Hunter Allen. Hunter Allen, welcome back to the Wise Athletes Podcast, man.
Oh, man, Joe, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me on. What a pleasure. What a pleasure. Yeah, yeah. Always great to talk to you.
I love it. You've been on several times, so thanks for all of your generosity with your time. And it's been a little while since our last one. I think Glenn was on with us we had our last chat. I haven't heard from Glenn in a while. I got to dig him up. He's like buried somewhere in South Korea, so I'll get him dug up.
There you go.
So anyway, we're talking about your new book. You wrote another book?
I wrote another book.
How could you have time to write another book?
Yeah, you know, it's been like 3 years it's taken me, and it's been a lot of research. It's been working with tons of different athletes of all kinds of different sports. It has it's been fun. It's been really fun learning what these things mean, what the curves and graphs mean, what different foods do. How can we apply this to sports of every type? Like if you're a pickleball player, you know, if you're a weightlifter, if you're a triathlete, you know, whatever it is. And so anyway, but yes, I've crammed it in.
Fantastic. Well, good for us that you did that. So just for everybody's background, maybe give us a few high points, but I want to make sure that people understand that you're not a scientist. You're an ex-pro cyclist, and you now coach, as you said, all kinds of different athletes.
Yep.
And you are making the case that a CGM, which is monitoring your blood glucose. So let's put the CGM aside. Yep. That your blood glucose can be used to not just affect your health, but affect your athletic performance. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us a bit about your background so people know that you've been doing hard shit for a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I started with the power meter thing back in 2000, and a good buddy of mine, Kevin Williams, and I, we created Cycling Peaks software, which became Training Peaks software. So I was one of the founders and owners of Training Peaks software for all the way until 2015. Dr. Andy Coggin and I wrote Training and Racing with a Power Meter that came out in 2006, the first edition. Second edition, 2009, third edition, 2019. It's had, I think now, almost 400,000 copies sold, 12 different languages all over the world, you know, and so that's been a huge part of just teaching everybody the principles of power training, right? What is FTP? What are the different training zones? What is training stress score? How do we use this tool to really improve our performance? And you know, as you know, and probably most of the listeners know, it's ubiquitous in every serious cyclist and serious triathlete's bicycle. They have a power meter now. So that's been a lot of fun. And wrote another book called Cutting Edge Cycling with Dr. Stephen Chung. Wrote another book on triathlon with Dr. Chris Myers, Triathlon Training with Power. So this is my fourth book. And I'm just super pumped to bring this new knowledge. Like, how do we use a CGM in the same way that we use power meters and all these other tech stuff?
Oh, right. I mean, there isn't a cyclist, a serious cyclist on the planet who doesn't have a power meter, just like the, every single one of them has at least one heart rate monitor. So right. You're thinking that one day we'll all be wearing CGMs too.
Yeah, for sure. And Joe, this goes be, I mean, first off, this, I want to talk about athletes, but I mean, this goes across everybody, right? And so this is going to be it's a great tool for longevity and vitality. I even have a chapter in my book on longevity and vitality. So that it gives you a taste of like, how can we use this to live longer and then kick butt while we're living longer? Because that's what we really want, right? I mean, I want to live till I'm 80, 90, but I don't want to be in my bed, you know, with somebody wiping my butt. I want to be in kicking butt when I'm 80 and 90.
That's right. Racing your bike or whatever.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Okay. So this is like right in the bullseye of what the Wise Athletes podcast is about. So this is awesome. Thank you. Why don't we start with, you know, why did you get into using a CGM? I mean, I'll tell you why I get into it.
Yeah. All right.
And because I've read your book, I think maybe we have a connection here. My blood sugar, even though I think I'm like incredibly healthy, my doctors tell me I'm incredibly healthy. My blood sugar is a little on the high side. It's not pre-diabetic, but it's always bumping right up against that barrier. Mm-hmm. And it's always, you know, it sort of haunts me and pisses me off because I do everything right. What the hell is, why is that number, HbA1c number, showing up as a red flag for me? And I saw that you have the same thing. And I don't know whether you think of it as a problem or not. I'm now thinking maybe for me, it's not a problem, but tell us your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think that there's so much to the HbA1c test, and that's what a lot of people will get, and their doctor will ask for this test. This test is an average of an average, and it's looking at basically how much, you know, glucose is in the cell and in this glycated state. And so what this does is in a big overall arching picture and a generalization, it's a good measure of people's how much glucose they have moving in their body and staying in their bloodstream and not moving into their tissues, generally their muscles, right, or their liver. And so that's become a great thing for a lot of people. Now, for athletes like us, right, it probably doesn't work as good. And I would argue that it's not a great test for most athletes. A better thing that you should do is have a CGM and look at your daily and nightly averages. Like, what is my average for the day? Okay, my average for the day is 100. My nightly average is 87. Okay, so those numbers right there, you know, can then convert. There's a really great, a bunch of different tools on the internet. You can just type in convert average glucose to HbA1c, mm-hmm. a little calculator, and you can convert it. And all of a sudden you'll see that like, oh, wow, if I have 100 as an average for the entire 24 hours and 87 for a night, you know, it's like that's like a 5.3 or something, you know,
exactly.
It's really low. All right. So that's a much better, especially for us as athletes. Now, the second thing that happens as athletes is our glucose is higher just because we're exercising more, right? Mm-hmm. So we spend more time with a higher glucose because we're just need it. It's like, you know, I did a 4-hour ride yesterday. You know, I spent that 4 hours at probably 130 milligrams per deciliter, which is not my normal day. You know, right. In my normal day, it's 100, right? But all of a sudden, that's going to skew my average higher. And then I had a recovery shake afterwards that made my glucose go to 160, which I wanted, because then that releases insulin, that brings in all those nutrients into my cells to help me recover. So I feel better today, you know, so all these things kind of compound when you look at an athlete and you start to say, you know, wow, you know, HbA1c is maybe not the best measure for us. And so for you, 5.9, you know, that's where you've been. I've been like 6.1, 6.2, 6.3, 5.9, 5.7 for like 20 plus years. Mm. And, you know, when I look at my actual CGM averages, it's like 5.3, 5.2.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so I think you're fine. I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, that's my conclusion as well. When I had that 5.9 show up, I got CGMs. I got a series of them, and I was tracking my blood sugar, and I was averaging like 95 to 100. And it was like, wait a minute, where's the 5.9 in that data? I can't find it. So I'm just going to put that aside. I'm going to keep doing what's been controlling my blood sugar. Another thing which I have encountered, I actually haven't encountered it in a while, which is a good thing, is bonking.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it isn't because, you know, maybe my liver is like really aggressive in pumping sugar when I'm exercising. But, you know, I mean, people are always bonking around me. But for me to bonk, I bonk twice ever. It's a completely horrible, miserable experience, and I don't ever want it to happen. But it only ever happened twice, and it was both times I had fasted for 24 hours, and then I did a high-intensity spin class.
Wow.
And then I was like having a heart attack, you know, my heart was pounding. I had cold sweats. I totally was like, I'm dying. I am dying. And it was just, no, you just need some sugar.
Yeah. So let's kind of define that. Like, so what is bonking? And, you know, that's just the layman's term of what's called hypoglycemia, meaning that your glucose level is going low. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, let's say, for example, you know, your average, like you said, let's say your average daily is 90 milligrams per deciliter. Now, when you train, when you're doing exercise, we have optimal glucose zones. So just like kind of training zones with a power meter or heart rate, there are optimal zones for your glucose to be in where you'll perform at your best. Okay. So for me, that's between 120 and about 140 milligrams per deciliter. When I'm in that place, I'm strong. I feel good. My energy levels are stable. I am ready to go. I have no issues. Now, if I'm watching those numbers and I see, okay, I'm at 120, and then all of a sudden it goes to 115, then it goes to 110, then it goes to 105, then it goes to 100, then it goes to 90. It's like, uh-oh, watch out. You know, I'm on what I call the slow slide. And I need to recognize that I'm on the slow slide. And I need to arrest that slide because, you know, if I don't stop it at about 100 and start eating some food, then it's kind of too late and I'll go down to 80 and then I'll bonk. I'll become hypoglycemic. And then that's where you get the sweats and you start to panic a little bit and you start to shake and you can't think and you don't have any energy. And so you need that glucose. Now, that's what we're trying to prevent. We're trying to make sure that we keep our glucose levels in this range where it's the optimal for us, whatever that is. Now, for some people, that may be between 90 and 110. Some people, that may be between 80 and 100. You know, everybody's different. Women are a little lower than men. All women's glucose levels are lower than men's glucose levels. So that's very normal. But we kind of need to find those ranges and then figure out, okay, how do we keep in that range so that way we're not jacking our glucose to 180 and then it's coming back down. So this also brings into a really important point, and this is what's called a reactive hypoglycemic crash. Right? Those are big words for when what happens is, I know you've heard of the crash, right? Oh, I had a glucose crash or I had a sugar crash or whatever, right? What is that? Like, nobody's really like explained that really well. So let's say, for example, let's go back to our numbers, 120, 115, 110, 105. Okay. 100. Okay. 95. Oh crap. I need to eat. Now what do? I stuff like 8 of these Clif blocks in my mouth. And then I squeeze 2 gels in my mouth because now I'm panicking and I need food. My glucose then goes from 90 up to 180. And then your body, your pancreas says, whoa, there's so much glucose in here. We need to get rid of this glucose. You're exercising. So you're using some of it as your exercise. Your pancreas releases insulin. That insulin sucks that glucose out of your bloodstream, into your muscles, into your liver, into all the different cells of the body. but it does it really quickly because it sensed there's a lot of it and it overstimulates the what's called the beta cells that send the insulin. So it sends too much insulin. So now you go to 180 and then remember we were at 90 to start and then it comes back down and now it comes down to 60. Right. And this is now you've really bonked. Right. This is what's called a reactive hypoglycemic crash. That's the real crash because you now finished at a lower place than you started from before you had the 8 Clif blocks and the 2 gels.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you about that. I've heard of this before. In fact, I've experienced this in a slightly different way, which I'll explain in a second. But first, I wanted to understand or at least confirm that you didn't mention that one of the problems with this is that you're doing this while you're exercising. And so your muscles can pull sugar from your blood mechanically without insulin while they're moving. And the insulin then has sort of a doubling effect of that. And so this is why you get this crash because you're like pulling the sugar out twice as fast as normal.
Yes.
And so it'll end up being low then. This is the hypo is low sugar.
Yes.
You're nodding. So that's why that works. Okay. So the scenario that I have encountered, in fact, I encountered it every single time and did not know what was happening was this, is that when I was doing track racing, I would try to follow the normal protocols, you know, because I had done openers the day before and, you know, and depleted, you know, got my muscles primed, but not tired. But I had depleted my glycogen. Mm-hmm. And then I would, roughly an hour before my race, I would top off my muscle glycogen, right? I would have a Clif bar or, you know, something that would, you know, top off my muscle glycogen. Everybody did this. I did this too. And inevitably, when I started warming up, after I warmed up, I would feel tired. I'd be like, why am I tired? I didn't do much yesterday and I just warmed up. I mean, I shouldn't be tired. And what I understand was happening, tell me if this is essentially what you were just describing, is that I had the same thing. I ate that sugar, my insulin went up. And then while I was still dumping that sugar out of my blood, I then started exercising and it accelerated the pulling out of the sugar. And now I had low blood sugar. And even though I did not bonk, my brain still recognized that, hey, this blood sugar is low. You must be low on fuel. So we're going to make you feel tired so you don't exercise too hard.
Right. Exactly. Right. And that happens every weekend, every weekday. There's a race anywhere around the world to thousands of athletes all the time, millions of athletes, that because they don't understand what's happening to them. And they're creating this bonk. They're creating this low glucose situation. And so, you know, that's where like you need to kind of test yourself because there are fast responders to how quickly the glucose rises and then how quickly it comes out. They're kind of this medium responder and then there are slower responders. And so there's some testing that you have to do. I love testing. We do all kinds of testing with power meters and all these things.
Right. Why not with CGMs?
Right. And now we got some little tests that we can do with these. And this will let you know, like, okay, should I have something an hour before? If I do have something an hour before, should I then have something in another 30 minutes? And then should I have something 5 minutes before my event? Or should I have something 2 hours before and then nothing until 20 minutes before my event? You know? Yeah. And so all of a sudden you have to kind of figure out like, wow, how do I do this?
Right. What works for you and your physiology? For me, what I found without using a CGM, I kept trying things and I would not try to top off my glycogen until I started my warm up.
Nice.
Because what I understood happened is that while I was exercising, my body wouldn't make as much insulin because it knew that it was the muscles were going to grab it.
Exactly, right? Because once you start exercising, basically that insulin, you know, it turns itself off and like, okay, now we can grab all this glycogen that's stored in our muscles and stuff.
But if I'd had a CGM, it would have been obvious what was happening, but I didn't.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right. Well, so that was great. And I think useful tips for people like me out there. I mean, it took me like a year to get to the bottom of that. I mean, if I could have just talked to you. So pay attention to that stuff. I think that there's like a few main points here. I mean, your book is just chock full of stuff. So we can't possibly, you know, convey all of that learning that you have done with all of your clients and written in your book here in the next, 40 minutes. So what I wanted to do is just give some people some high points, you know, why does it matter for your athletic performance? We already, I mean, if anybody's been listening or, you know, this podcast or others, they already have a clue about why blood glucose matters for health, maybe longevity. They have some idea about that, but why would it matter for athletic performance? I mean, my body doesn't just burn glucose. It also burns fat. And sometimes I want it to burn as much fat as possible. And the glucose is kind of an afterthought. So maybe give us your thoughts on is it only in high intensity where I'm burning mostly carbohydrates? Or, you know, what are your thoughts about why is looking at the glucose so important?
Yeah. The previous example that you just talked about from your experience is a perfect reason why, right? Because one, we're trying to learn how do we manage our energy levels and how do we manage them before an exercise, right? Before training, whether you're going to CrossFit, whether you're getting ready to go to weightlifting, whatever that is, whether you're getting ready for a triathlon, whatever it is, you know, so managing your glucose levels before the event is really critical. And again, you may not be a competitor. It may just be the group ride you're doing on Saturday with your buddies, or you're going to play pickleball with your buddies on, you know, Tuesday mornings or something. Whatever that is, you want to manage that level. And so that's number one. Then number two, let's think about during the actual workout or event itself. So we kind of talked about like, well, gosh, the slow slide is occurring, right? If I know what my optimal zones are, where do I keep my optimal zones? And then I want to make sure that I recognize some of these things, these patterns that occur. So in my book, I've got lots of different graphs and of different glucose, you know, levels. And in different scenarios, like what does this bump mean? What does this, you know, flatline mean? What does this mean? And so that's important because you need to kind of recognize like what is happening. Oh, wow, I'm in the slow slide. I know that I need to start eating. And instead of just jamming a bunch of stuff in my mouth, well, gosh, I'm going to put two of these little blocks in my mouth. And I'm going to chew two of them and I'm going to suck on two for 5 minutes like a little chipmunk. And then I'm going to look at my glucose in 5 minutes and see if it moved up. Oh, it went from 100 to 105. Okay, I'm going to put two more in my mouth and I'm going to eat those two and I'm going to suck on these two new ones. And then I look at it again. Oh, it went back up to 115. Right. Okay, cool. Right. And then in another 10 minutes, I'm going to do it again. Right. So now all of a sudden, you know, you're able to bring your glucose back up in a steady way that keeps your energy level stable and not create this reactive hypoglycemic crash or not just continue the slow slide before you do that. And then at the same time, manage that level up. So that's during, right? Then afterwards, right? So what do we do afterwards? We're replenishing our glycogen stores. Glycogen is the stored form of glucose. Glucose, you eat carbohydrates. It can be fructose, glucose, dextrose, all the different ways that carbohydrates come, all the different sugars that they come in. Eventually, they turn into glucose in the body and then goes through the liver first. The liver pulls what it needs. It stores it. The liver doesn't store very much, only about 30 minutes or so. And then the rest of it goes into the bloodstream. Then the cells pull it, the muscles pull it, all these things pull this out of the bloodstream. Your body's trying to maintain homeostasis. But when we exercise, we use the glycogen, the stored form. That's what really fuels our muscles. A lot of people don't realize that. A lot of people think that, oh, it's the food that I eat right now fuels my muscles. Well, okay, it does, but it goes into the muscles and has to be turned into glycogen. Then it's fueled as the muscle. So anyhow, you exhaust this glycogen stores in the muscles. We've got to replenish that. So what do we want afterwards? We want a big glucose spike after our workouts. So recovery shake is important if you're doing a hard workout where you've depleted some of that. Okay. So if you just go for an hour easy, you don't need a recovery shake. Okay. If you go for an hour with tons of intervals, maybe you probably need a recovery shake. And if you go for 4 hours, you're definitely going to need a recovery shake. Right. Then you get that glucose up. The body then releases insulin. Insulin says, okay, let's open up the cells. Let's get the glucose. Let's get the nutrients, all the vitamins, the proteins, everything into that cell. So then we can basically repair the cell, replenish the glycogen stores, so you feel good for the next day. So there's those three pieces from just the athletic standpoint. But then there's also the piece of it like, okay, well, why do I want to use one of these things in my daily life as an athlete? So you have to kind of think a little bit about, well, you know, one of the first things that most people do when they put a CGM on is they see these glucose spikes go up and down. They're like, oh my God, I'm just like on a roller coaster all day long. This is insane, you know, and maybe you are, but the answer is not trying to flatline it. Okay. So,
no carbohydrates.
Right? That's not the answer, right? Like, especially if you're an athlete, right? I mean, you're not going to do high intensity exercise if you just go keto and you don't eat any carbohydrates. You can't do intensity. So that's not the answer. But the answer is, can we mute some of these spikes? Can, instead of going to 180, can we go to 130 and make it stay up and kind of trickle down if we need to? Those are definitely strategies that we want to employ. And we want to make sure that, that way, what we put in, you know, for breakfast, for lunch, for a snack, for dinner, is in a way that we do it so that we're not overstimulating the pancreas to produce too much insulin. The pancreas is an amazing, amazing organ. It produces tons of different hormones, not just insulin, but it can wear out. And so we don't want to wear that sucker out. And then that could be, you know, all of a sudden you could get type 1 diabetes as you get older because you just don't produce insulin. I think they're kind of calling it type 1.5 now.
Okay.
When you get older. And
it's not autoimmune. You've just worn it out.
Just worn it out.
Okay.
So anyway, so those are just some real high level reasons why we want to use these things and to understand. And, you know, you probably had this experience. It's a behavioral tool, right? I mean, did you change your behavior because you started seeing some of these numbers?
Oh, sure. I mean, you get immediate feedback. It maybe is delayed by, you know, seconds, but you totally see the consequences of what you ate, when you ate, what you ate it with, what you were doing before you ate, what you did after you ate. I mean, everything matters. And it's way too complicated. If you're trying to prick your finger and get, you know, and try to test your blood glucose on a strip, you're never going to, you can't figure out what is doing what. All you can figure out is that it's high or it's low. And you don't know why.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, so I wanted to reiterate what I am taking away from this as the most important point. Because a lot of this I have understood and was in agreement before, you know, I read your book, but I was glad to get all the details from the book. But what I came away with an understanding of is, you know, when your body is running, let's just say for the example, your body is low on glucose and your body reacts to that. You know, you get tired. You know, you have all kinds of reactions to that. I mean, I spoke about bonking and I thought I was dying. I mean, that's just a bunch of reactions that the brain put on me. And unlike a car, when you run out of gas and somebody comes by with a, you know, a 5 gallon, you just put that in there and away you go. You're just as good as you were if you hadn't run out of gas. But your body is not like that. When your body has run out of gas, you can't just put more gas in and go. Your body is, your brain has said, we're in danger. This race is stupid. You're not doing this anymore. I mean, so you really need to get ahead of these bad events and avoid them.
Yes.
Not just respond to them.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. That is so key, right? I mean, you know, we can run without glucose. We can live without glucose if you need to. Your body can turn fat and proteins. And proteins will turn into fat. You can turn that fat back into glucose and feed your body through that glucose, but it doesn't let you do anything above a really slow pace. Right.
And it's the adaptation to do that enough to live on it takes time, right? This is what they say when you get fat adapted. Well, that takes a while. Anybody ever did keto, they had keto flu. Well, what was that? That was your body not ready to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it really isn't realistic if you're an athlete, right? There are very few athletes who can do this. And the ones that do aren't doing high intensity type work, right? So it's important that we have glucose, that we keep glucose, you know, we eat carbohydrates, but we just need to be, you know, really aware of what we're eating. And so, like, here's a really simple trick and a simple thing to do to help stabilize your blood glucose when you have lunch or dinner. You know, so first off, I call it food stacking, right? Because we're stacking the food down in your stomach. All right. So the first thing you do is we're going to have a salad and we're going to put vinegar on it. Okay. Not oil, just vinegar. Just do vinegar. Balsamic vinegar is perfectly fine. Get some good balsamic vinegar. Do a salad, greens, put whatever you want on there and do vinegar. That's the first layer. That vinegar reacts in three different ways in the body to help mute the blood glucose. All right. It's really interesting. The next thing you're going to do, and you get your plate and you've got your veggies and you've got your protein, you've got your carbohydrates. Well, instead of kind of picking from these things throughout your meal, you're going to focus on one. I'm going to eat all my veggies now. So now we're going to put in the fiber, all the veggies in next. Then we're going to go to the protein. And now I'm putting the protein on top of that one. The last thing on the plate that I'm going to eat is going to be my carbohydrates.
So the starchy carbs. Because you ate the vegetables. That's carbohydrates.
Yep. Exactly. Right. So like your rice, pasta, you know, even like the legumes, like lentils, whatever, you know, those types of things. That goes on top, and now they're going to absorb much more slowly as everything absorbs in the whole system. And so now instead of the glucose, if you flipped it and inverted it, I'm going to eat all my carbs first, and then my protein, then I'm going to eat my veggies, then I'm going to eat my salad last, then your glucose may go to 160, but to do it the way I'm telling you, it may only go to 120 or 115 or 110. You know, so really makes a huge difference, the order of how you eat your foods.
Okay, so we're getting into things you can do off the bike or off the run or, you know, what your exercise, just to manage your blood glucose, not by changing what you eat, but just the order that you eat.
Yes.
That's amazing that it can have that big of an effect. I think another thing which I have found very helpful to me is I walk after I eat. It's amazing. I mean, walking is hardly even exercise, but man, it sure drops my blood sugar.
Yeah. Yeah. And I call it ultra low intensity exercise because that's what walking is, right? Especially for people who are trained, right? It's ultra low intensity. It's just we're walking. But it's amazing. It's an amazing, amazing thing. Like after dinner, go for a walk, 20 minutes, just enjoy the evening, go for a walk, man. What happens is that all the glucose that comes in the bloodstream, it just instantly gets used, right? Nice. We're just using it right now. We're getting it out of the bloodstream. We're using it and it's just lowering everything. That's a great, great thing to do.
Awesome. All right. Well, so maybe we could just spend the rest of the time that we have at the end. We'll let people know how they can, you know, get in touch with you and find your book.
Sure.
But you know, between now and then, let's touch on, you know, some advice, things you have learned through this experience that whether they get a CGM or not, we think they should, you know, maybe not every day of their lives, but at least, you know, for, you know, a few months, a year, maybe to learn about themselves. And then maybe do it again the next year to see if anything has changed. Maybe they've lost weight or put on some muscle or, you know, whatever has changed. But what could just behavioral wise could people take away the things to try, whether they have a CGM or not?
Right. So let's start out with thinking from a perspective of okay, I'm going to go and do an event, and I need to, one, make sure that let's say this event is 3 hour long bicycle ride, and it's going to require me to, you know, go over one mountain or something like that. So I'm going to need to be fueled for this 3 hour event, and I need to make sure it's going to start at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I need to make sure I'm going to eat early enough that I'm good for the whole event itself. Now, the night before, right? The day before, 2 days before, you kind of have to start out with 2 days before. And this is nothing new, right? We've heard this before, right? 2 days before your event, that's when you want your best sleep. That's when you want to eat the most amount of, you know, good foods for you and additional carbohydrates to do a little bit of carbohydrate loading there. You can do a little loading in. And then the day of the event, you know, okay, this thing is going to start at 7 o'clock in the morning. The last thing you want to do is eat at 8 or 9 o'clock at night, have your glucose at 160 through 3 o'clock in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's eat early and then let's not have a real heavy carbohydrate meal, which kind of goes against a lot of that. Oh man, you got a pasta load, you got a carb load the night before, you know, it's like, and the problem with that is you really need to do it the day before, and you could have a little more carbs at lunchtime, but just have a normal meal that evening before. Have your carbs, but stack it the way I'm talking about and just eat a normal meal. You're going to be fine. You're going to go to bed. Your glucose levels are going to be stable. What's that going to do? It's going to help you sleep better. All right. Mm-hmm. You want to get good sleep. Like, eating late is bad for your sleep, and mm-hmm. eating and going to bed with a high glucose level is bad for your sleep, right? Mm-hmm. You don't sleep that great. All right. Get up in the morning. You're up in the morning. You're up at 4 or whatever. Now, what am I going to do? How do I fuel myself so that I don't have what you earlier talked about? Oh, this energy drop where my glucose went down right before my event. Now you've got to make sure that you have a good combination of foods where you've got some good fats, some good protein, some good carbohydrates, so that you're not just spiking your glucose at 4 o'clock in the morning to 180. Mm. All right. So let's have a good combination of those foods. Think about those things that you can combine. And then before your event, all right, so hopefully you'll have done the fast, medium, and slow responder kind of test for my book. But if you haven't, like, just before your event, like, I'm going to have something 45 minutes, but then I'm going to have something else 10 minutes before my event. And that can be a bar or a gel or whatever, but 10 minutes before, do something else. It could be just a glucose drink, a carbohydrate drink as well. That's totally fine. Because most events start pretty quickly and all of a sudden you're off, right? And everybody's off and we're off in these events. And it takes a little while for your glucose, your body, to react and say, oh man, Joe, you're going hard. Oh crap. We need to send out some of this glucose so we can make these muscles work, right? That's about 4 or 5 minutes down the road where you needed it from the gun right from the start. So if we prime our system by having something 10 minutes before, that gets the glucose back up. Maybe it gets into the range where we want it. So let's say, again, for me, 120 to 140, I'm in that range. The event starts, I'm ready to go, and I'm ready to go right from the start. So, you know, think about that piece of the puzzle, you know, from just kind of like starting into an event and then priming the system. So you can do this even for a gym workout. It's like, man, I'm going to do my gym workout at, you know, whatever, lunchtime. All right. I'm going to go to the gym at lunchtime. Okay. Well, gosh, what does that mean? Does that mean you're skipping lunch? Does that mean you're eating lunch afterwards back at your desk? Does that mean you're eating lunch before and then you're going to work out? What does that mean? And, well, you don't want to go do your gym workout at lunchtime, and last time you ate was 7 o'clock in the morning and now your glucose is going down. You're going to have a poor workout, right? So, well, okay, well, what if we back it out and say, okay, at 11:30, let's eat something so that we get your glucose levels up so that you have a good workout and then you have your lunch afterwards. So we need to kind of think about how we're changing, again, this CGM is a great behavioral tool, right? How do we change our behavior and then look at the foods and that we think about, like, okay, well, what should I eat before my gym workout? Should I have a banana? Okay, what does that do to my glucose? Okay, should I have an orange? What does that do? Should I have, you know, a cup of lentils or a cup of rice? Or should I have, you know, a candy bar? What should I have? And so that way you can start to understand, well, gosh, every time I have, you know, a banana, my glucose goes up to 140 and then it comes back down within 10 minutes. Okay, probably not good for me. Maybe it's good for you. But so everybody's a little different. So you have to do some experimentation, all right? But we have to also think in terms of how things impact you from the morning, from maybe even the night before.
Awesome. It complicates it that people are so different. You know, I mean, the power meter is almost easy by comparison because, you know, it is what it is. Yep. You know, the power is what the power is. And, you know, maybe you're lighter and you need less power. Okay. It's more like heart rate where, you know, so what heart rate should I be at? Well, you know, who knows? I mean, you better like get a bunch of experience using the heart rate to see what heart rate you should be at. And so the CGM is kind of like that. It's sort of fundamental physiology and everybody's a little different. So the only way to get at it is to see your own curves and experiment, not eat the same things and do the same things all the time, but do different things and find. But I guess the thing that people need in their mind while they're looking at their own numbers is, what do they want? Right. And so you've said that there's an optimal zone where they are feeling really good. Mm-hmm. They're feeling powerful and they should make note of that and see, well, what was their blood sugar? And for you, it was like 120, something like that is what you said. So that's what you want. That you're not looking for 180, you're looking for 120. And you're not looking for 70, you're looking for 120. And bouncing up and down around that is not as good as being right there.
Right, exactly. You know, and so there's a couple of things, right? So number one, you hit on the points, a couple of points. You know, you need 6 months of data, right? You need to use a CGM for 6 months because you need enough life experiences, right? You need to go on vacation. You need to have some work stress. You need to have family stress. You need to have some times where you didn't sleep great at night. You know, you need to have times where, you know, you felt great and you're working out. You know, you need to have times where you did long workouts, short workouts, just enough life experiences in 6 months so that you can start to understand how that the glucose changes. After that 6 months, then you can say, okay, I've made some behavioral changes. I know how this works for me. You know, I know if I eat this, this is going to happen. If I know if I eat this, this is going to happen. I know if I don't sleep, this is going to happen, etc. Then from then you can say, okay, gosh, I'm going to wear one of these things, you know, for 2 weeks during a period of heavy training, right? Or a really important event is coming up. I'm going to wear it the week before the event and the week after, or maybe there's 2 weekends of an event I'm going to wear it for. Or maybe there's a period of a month I'm going to wear it for. So 6 months plus then you can kind of use them as needed from there. You know, the other point that's really important too is that, as you mentioned, everybody's a little different. And so that's where you have to recognize these patterns. And so I hope that's what in my book is I've done a decent job of showing you the patterns so that you can say, oh, that's me, right? And you know, gosh, if I did every single one, the book would have been 1,000 pages and super boring to read. Nobody would have read it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm going to have other ones on my website that'll, you know, different case studies and things that you can look at. And you know, if you find some crazy thing, send it to me. You know, hey, send it to me and I'll look at it and try and explain it and see what I can find. And maybe we'll learn something from it and I can write an article on it. I'm happy to do that.
Nice.
So I think that's part of it, is that there is this, you know, unknown, not, well, unknown is not the right word, but individual nature of each person and how they respond. And so that's where you can get a little bit confused, right? Like, oh gosh, I don't know what's happening right now. I remember the first time I went on vacation. My glucose was stable for the week before. It'd been stable, really good. I had really great glucose values for months, been training hard, not training, going through all of life. And then I went on vacation, flew to Europe, and all of a sudden time changes happened. And now I'm eating different foods. And then I'm like, got jet lag. And then I'm doing a bike ride at different weird times and not sleeping great. And my glucose was all over the place. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm a diabetic now. Like, what's happening? And so it's very interesting, and you know, to see kind of how things work and how your body starts to adapt. Because the body wants to come back to homeostasis. It wants to equalize all these things and bring it back to this level, you know, because this is where it's happy and all the cells and everything's working the way it needs to be. That's a piece of puzzle.
Yeah. I'll add to that another variable that I have personally experienced, and that is that you change over time. I've dabbled in CGMs over like the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. And my experience at the first time I did it is nothing like my last experience.
Really?
And so now I'm also not the same person. My diet is different. My workouts are different. Where I'm living is different. So everything is different. And so it makes sense that my blood glucose curves with my life and my exercise would also be different. And so this business of, learning yourself, I don't think that it ends. You know, maybe you don't do it every year, but you better keep your eye on that. I mean, I wear a heart rate monitor all the time. Do I need to? All I don't know is the answer. That's why I wear it all the time, you know. But right. So the CGMs are now getting to be affordable. Yeah. When I first did it, it was a really horrific experience economically. Yes. And now I get them through my Oura Ring.
Oh, nice.
They're the DEXA over-the-counter ones.
Yep. Yep.
They're so cheap. Mm-hmm. It's like $50 for 2 weeks, and they fail more often than I would like.
Right.
And they give you they barely ask you what happened. They just send you another one.
Yes.
So this is money well spent. If you can find that kind of money, it's money well spent, in my opinion.
Absolutely. There's two that are available without prescription right now. It's the one you talked about. It's the Stelo is what it's called, and it's STELO.com. And that's the Dexcom non-prescription one. The other one, Abbott Labs has one, and it's called the Freestyle Libre. And that's also non-prescription. You can buy that and have it sent directly to you. There are obviously prescription ones that you can buy as well. Now, they're supposedly more accurate. Now, the non-prescription ones are plus or minus 20 milligrams per deciliter. The prescription ones are plus or minus 10 milligrams per deciliter. Now, I have not gotten a good answer from any of these manufacturers, like why that's the case and what are they doing. To me, from my, 15 years of being in the software world, it's got to be just a software thing, right? It can't be just they've changed anything in the hardware. It has to be some tweak in the software that they're doing, to me, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I would love to hear from some of these manufacturers and understand exactly what's going on there.
Right.
Now, what this means, Joe, though, is that you need a glucometer, right? Go on Amazon. If you're listening to this and you're going to get a CGM, buy a $40 glucometer. It comes with the little pricker, comes with test strips. It comes with all the stuff you need. And then that way you can test, right? Because you're going to test, you're going to put the CGM in, you got it on your arm, right here.
Yeah.
It's on the back of your tricep. You're going to put that sucker in. And then in about 6 to 12 hours, you're going to test your finger and see what it says. Okay, my finger says I'm at 90. My CGM says I'm at 100. Okay, I'm 10 off, right? Then at 24 hours, you're going to do it again. Now my finger says I'm at 100. My glucometer says I'm 115. I'm 15 off. So now I'm like knowing kind of where this thing is, and it's high. It's reading high for me. They're all a little different. you got to kind of figure that out. And then if anything during that 14 days looks wrong, get the glucometer out, test your finger. Now, you do need to know the number at your finger is going to be different than the number on the CGM. You're testing it in different places.
Right. So even if it was perfectly accurate, both of them, they would be different.
They're going to be different, right? It's measuring in what's called the interstitial fluid. The CGM measures in the interstitial fluid. This is kind of the last place that the glucose goes, right? Now, if you went to the hospital and they gave you an intravenous, you know, one in here, went right straight to your vein, then boom, we could see what your glucose was intravenously. That's the best one, right? That's the gold standard. It's actually in the blood right then. We prick our finger. This has made it through the capillaries. Now it's right here on the surface. You're getting this little blood glucose here as well. That's going to be different than the intravenous one, right? So then out here, now the glucose is perfused through all the tissues, right. It's in the skin, the interstitial fluid.
Okay. So just would the patterns still be useful?
Yes. That's okay. The most important part is the consistency is there. Right. Okay. So that's the key is like, okay, this thing is reading 10 high. That's fine. But you know, it's okay because it's going to be 10 high, 15 high the whole time I'm using it. And does it matter? Not really. It just is what it is. So,
okay.
All right. That's important.
Excellent. All right. So let's start to wrap it up. I want to leave time for you to, tell us how to find you in your book. But before we do that, if there's anything else, any important tips that you want to share?
Yeah. You know, I think that one of the key things here that we also, you know, that I talk a little bit about in my book is understanding, you know, what is a good graph, right? What is a good line? What does that mean? And when you are in a good place. Now, that like we talked, I mentioned earlier, it's not a flat line, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not this big bump, right? It can come up and then it can come down. It's going to come up and come down. There's going to always be some roller coaster nature to that. And mm-hmm. That's okay, right? That's fine. We just don't want these big peaks and big valleys. It's totally normal to have this roller coaster nature, especially when we're working out. Mm-hmm. At night, when you're sleeping and you wake up in the morning, you want to see that number come down and then just kind of flatline while you're sleeping mm-hmm. at night. Mm-hmm. All right. And that's really important because then you know that one, I ate early enough. I didn't have a ton of carbs or over, you know, too much sugar at dinner mm-hmm. and that my body's working well. It's pulling the glucose out, replenishing glycogen stores, feeding all the cells, et cetera. And now I'm just kind of cruising along in the bottom and everything is happy and hunky dory in the morning. Now there's a thing called the dawn effect in the morning. And mm-hmm. So before you wake up or right as you wake up, your glucose is going to come up a little bit, maybe 10 milligrams per deciliter. You know, the cortisol is released. All these kind of hormones start waking you up. Mm. Glucose is going to come up just a little bit before you even eat breakfast, before you even have coffee. That's totally normal. All right. So there's some things in here that you need to understand. The other thing that I want to point out too, is that when you get in a shower, the change in temperature, there's a temperature sensor in these guys. Mm. So when you get in a shower, especially a hot shower, it's going to look like it's got a big glucose spike. That's an error. It does not have anything to do. It's just the change in temperature shows this big glucose spike. So don't worry. Oh God, every time I take a hot shower, my glucose goes to 180.
Or you go in the sauna. I've seen that. When I go in the sauna, it's like, whoa, my blood sugar went crazy. I guess you're saying no.
No, no.
Okay.
No. Okay. So don't worry about that. That's just important. So hopefully that helps, but a couple little good points.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's great. Thanks very much. So tell our audience how they can find you and your book.
Absolutely. Training and Competing with a Continuous Glucose Monitor. You can go to my website, trainingandcompetingwithacgm.com. I still have some autographed versions on there. You can, I'll even personalize them to you. And so check that out, training and competing with CGM.com. This is also on Audible and Kindle on Amazon too. So if you have Audible or Kindle, get it right there on Amazon.
Although the pictures of the graphs is so important, I can't imagine Audible, but the Kindle version that would work.
I mean, I think that, all right, so here, shameless plug, right? Buy the Audible and the book.
There you go.
But seriously, like, you make a good point, right? It's like the Audible is great to listen to when you're in a car, but then you're going to want to go back and be like, okay, what was that graph? Oh, that's what that graph was, right? And then you go back and refer to the graph, and that's going to be even more helpful.
Yeah. So, picture's worth a thousand words, they say, right?
That's it.
That's it. All right. Okay. Well, Hunter, thank you very much again. So this is great. Have a good one, man.
Awesome, Joe. Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be on. It's a joy. Love talking to you, man. You're great.
Yeah.
So
you're the best. Appreciate it. All right. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Thank you so much for joining my conversation with Hunter Allen. You can find more information about Hunter and how to find his book in the show notes.